Welcome back to Saturdayness. It is my great pleasure to welcome IQ Al-Rasuli. He is the foremost expert on Islam. In my view, he is not only the world's greatest treasure and resource as it relates to understanding the world's most deadly menace, but also the most courageous individual that I have had the opportunity to know. Before we get to the primary topic I'd like to talk to you about this morning, IQ, I would like your comments on a declaration from James Clapper. I don't know if the name James Clapper means anything to you, but he's the National Intelligence Chief of the United States. He said this morning that this past year was the worst year in the history of global terrorism, the worst year ever recorded. And then he went on to specify that half of the deaths associated with terrorism occurred in three countries, Pakistan, Iraq, and Afghanistan. Is there a common thread to those three countries and to the rise of terrorism?
Well, for people who are politically correct, there is no common thread, but for people who are intelligent, Islam.
Islam. Yeah, there's two things, actually, that the three countries have in common. One is, and that terrorism has in common. First of all, some 99.9% of the world's terrorist acts today are perpetrated by one group of people. And who might they be?
Muslims.
Yeah. And not extremist Muslims, not radical Muslims, fundamentalist Muslims.
Absolutely right. There is no such thing as a radical Muslim, extremist Muslim, militant Muslim, or moderate Muslim. They are Muslim. Right. End of conversation.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, even by me correcting the radical extremist point of view of this misnomer of that there is a radical and extremist view of Islam when there's only one Islam, by me using fundamentalist Muslim, I'm in a way being misleading, because there is no definition of Islam except Islam. It's the only Islam is the Islam of Muhammad, of Islam, of the Quran and Hadith. And that Islam is a death cult. It's a criminal enterprise.
It is a criminal enterprise. It started, as we said a million times before, in Medina, 1,400 years ago, in the year 622, practically, A.D.
Yes.
And Muhammad became the leader of the first organized crime syndicate in human history.
And
they have continued for 1,400 years.
And the first 10 years thereafter, he led 75 terrorist raids, all designed to rob people of their possessions, of their lives, of their bodies, because he raped the women, and he sold the children into slavery.
Absolutely right. And after that, the Arabs who came out from Peninsula of Arabia, mm-hmm. from the year 635 onwards until today, they have never stopped pillaging, plundering, and doing the same thing. By the way, ISIS, as I'm speaking to you today,
mm-hmm.
they are not only destroying human beings,
right.
they are eradicating the history of Iraq as I'm speaking to you.
Right.
They are destroying all the artifacts of 3,000 years ago.
Yeah. Well, the reason that they have to eradicate history is because the Quran's depiction of history is completely erroneous. I mean, the Quran not only has history wrong, and therefore doesn't have any prophecy having future history correct, but it's also wrong scientifically. So Muslims find it necessary to recreate history. Otherwise, their religion loses all of its credibility.
Well, it is. It's not, first of all, we're not going to have a semantics. It's a cult belief system. We can call it a religion. Right. But they have absolutely no beginning and no middle and no ending. They are irrelevant. Everything in the Quran is irrelevant. Everything has been plagiarized, plundered, pirated, and or perverted from other people's religions, right. other people's traditions.
Right.
Nothing in Islam is new except the terror.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the first 80-some-odd Quranic surahs that were revealed are almost universally plagiarized from the pagan Arabs in Yemen, the Hanifs, and in their case, it was their god, Ar-Rahman, that was touted, and every one of the five pillars of Islam comes from that pagan past. So it starts there, and then as he moves to Yathrib, today's Medina, and comes into contact with rabbis, he then turned almost all of his plagiarism and bastardization and twisting to perverted versions of the Talmud.
Correct? This is Islam. This is Muhammad. This is his Quran. This is his Sunnah. Depraved, hate-mongering, war-mongering, misogynist, racist, intolerant, vile, and is totally ungodly.
Correct. Now, I want to ask you, is there another common denominator besides Islam and the place where half of the world's terrorist deaths took place last year? Pakistan, Iraq, and Afghanistan. What is the other common denominator?
I can't think of anything more than that they are all Sunni Muslim, or most of them are Sunni Muslim.
Well, let me put this out. I have been saying for some time that the Islamic State wants to be attacked. And that the reason that they're putting out their fraudulent videos, like, for example, the 21 Christians beheaded in Libya, the entire video from beginning to end is a fraud. The reason they're putting out their fraudulent videos, the reason that they're doing things to incite a response, is they want to be attacked. And that the reason they want to be attacked is, once you understand the Islamic mindset as it was perpetrated by Muhammad right at the first day of the Islamic era with the Pledge of Aqaba, is that the only way that a Muslim has a guarantee of entering Allah's perverted whorehouse of paradise is to be killed killing non-Muslims.
Correct.
So they want to die.
Right.
They want to be attacked. And so they are touting the West for the express purpose of being attacked so that they can die as a jihadist.
Correct. But the irony of it, Hamas is exactly the same thing as ISIS.
Correct.
But when the Israelis defend themselves and kill the Hamas people,
right. They
say they demonstrate with rage. How
right.
they thought they should be celebrating.
Of course.
Well, they
are celebrating. They call the person a martyr. Now, there is a common denominator in Pakistan, Iraq, and Afghanistan. They're all countries America has invaded recently. We invade Pakistan with our drones, and we have invaded Iraq and Afghanistan. So if our military influence, our invasion militarily of those three countries has resulted in those three countries having, you know, there's 250 countries in the world. Three countries are suffering half of the world's terrorist deaths. And they happen to be the three countries that America has been the most aggressive invading militarily. Would you say maybe that our military response is counterproductive?
It is. It has always been.
So here we are touting our military as the answer to terrorism, and the three countries we have been the most aggressive in have gone from having virtually no terrorism. I mean, there was no terrorism in Afghanistan, in Iraq, or in Pakistan prior to the American influence. And we've turned them into the worst three countries in the world for terrorist acts. Why isn't the world able to see how our military intervention has been counterproductive?
Only America's intervention is European intervention. The French have been doing the same thing.
Yes.
The British have been doing the same thing. In North Africa, they shouldn't have interfered in, I guess, Gaddafi.
Look at the result of bombing Gaddafi out of power. Now, what is Libya now?
Not only Libya, the whole of North Africa
Correct.
Has gone bad only because of Libya.
Correct.
Only because of Libya, nothing else.
Because we decided we wanted Muammar Gaddafi out of power. We weren't smart enough to realize that the example of taking Saddam Hussein out of power was creating a civil war between Sunnis and Shias in Iraq, and that civil war then spreading to Syria. We weren't smart enough to look at our immediate past. So we wanted to take Muammar Gaddafi out of power, and what we ended up with after bombing that country into submission and then providing mountains of arms for the jihadists is a terrorist hellhole.
The irony is this. They still haven't learned anything. The Americans haven't learned. The American
right.
military haven't learned.
No.
The American intelligence haven't learned anything, and the Europeans right. also. Yeah. They are still talking about young people being radicalized. You cannot radicalize a Muslim.
No, you can't.
A Muslim is a Muslim.
Yeah.
He's reading the Quran.
Right.
He's reading Muhammad's Sunnah. There's no way on earth you can change him into a non-radical. It's
right.
impossible.
It's impossible, yeah. And the source material is the same. There's only one Sunnah. There's only one Quran. There's only one Muhammad. And that Sunnah, that Quran, that Muhammad, was a terrorist. He was a criminal. He was a thief. He was a mass murderer. He was a slave trader. He was amongst the, if not the, single most perverted individual who ever lived.
He was the most, in fact, in my not so humble opinion,
yes,
he was the most despicable creature that has ever walked the face of this earth. And I said it before, Hitler compared to Muhammad is like a Mother Teresa.
Absolutely. Oh, that's factual. And what's happened now in Libya is that the very weapons that we provided for the Mujahideen under the ruse that they were freedom fighters, when they're fundamentalist Muslims, to overthrow Gaddafi's secular government, those weapons now are being used by Boko Haram. And there are thousands of little girls who are being raped every day because we provided those weapons. And there doesn't seem to be any accountability or any remorse on behalf of America and the West, Europe, for having provided the weapons that have caused so many little girls to be kidnapped and raped. As a matter of fact, even the Islamic State, who provided the weapons that the Islamic State is using to kidnap and rape little girls?
The United States.
Correct. Yeah, the United States.
But
you know, who needs a conspiracy theory when the truth is this condemning?
This is this is the problem. We deal with facts. We deal with reality. We have never, ever told a lie or perverted anything, and yet people will not believe us as much as they would believe a creature called Barack Hussein Obama, who is a pathological liar like Muhammad.
Yeah, he is. In fact, he is a narcissist, and when we return, I do want to explore your definition of Muhammad and Barack Hussein Obama as narcissists. I took the time this morning to look up narcissist, and oh my goodness, the labels actually work. As a matter of fact, the other thing that we came to the conclusion just a couple of weeks ago is that Paul, the founder of Christianity, also shared those same narcissistic tendencies, and that when you understand narcissism, you can see their behavior, their patterns of perversion, their egomania. It's prevalent. The other thing I want to talk to you about is what happened in Bangladesh, because there is a real bite behind Islam. There is a tremendous risk. You have to have great courage to do what you do. And we'll talk about what Muslims did in Bangladesh. In Bangladesh today, a knife-wielding mob. And to put this in perspective, the knives that this mob of fundamentalist Muslims was wielding were butcher knives. They hacked to death a U.S. Bangladesh writer, and they mutilated his wife. She is still clinging to life, her body in pieces. They did so because Abhijit Roy, the writer, likens religion to a highly contagious virus. And while we may agree and disagree on various conclusions that Mr. Roy has communicated, he is correct. Islam is a highly contagious virus, and it is an extraordinarily deadly virus. Now, if a large group of people is infected with a virus, what's the best approach to insulate others from that virus?
First, quarantine them, then exterminate them.
You know, what's interesting in the case of Islam, IQ, that quarantining them would lead to their own extermination. You don't have to exterminate Muslims. In fact, I would not advocate exterminating Muslims. The reality is, if you quarantine a Muslim, you stop doing business with Islamic countries, they're going to kill themselves. They'll have no food production. They'll have no economy. They will be still enraged and ruthless and murderous, so they'll be killing one another. They'll wipe each other out. You don't have to do a thing. Just quarantine them.
Agreed. No problem.
Yeah. Yes. There's only one intelligent response to Islam, and that's to quarantine it. It is a deadly disease that is highly contagious. And if you don't quarantine it, the entire world's going to be infected with this disease one way or the other. It's either going to be, it's going to actually have that disease destroy the very fabric of the individuals it infects, or those infected by the disease are going to be so destructive that society can't survive. That has been what we have learned about Islam. It's the only rational conclusion about Islam. It's the only way to respond to Islamic terrorism. It has to be quarantined. But this individual, IQ, he was hacked to death because he was critical of Islam. He was critical of all religions, but he was particularly critical of Islam. And so a group of Muslims armed with butcher knives savaged, ravaged, mutilated his body and that of his wife, who's 40 years old.
What I can't understand is why did he do it in that country, knowing full well what would be happening to him?
Yeah, he lives for the most part in America. He was in Bangladesh because he was at a book fair.
Big mistake.
Of course.
Huge mistake.
You know, I look at these the Americans like this, this girl here who went over to Syria as an aid worker, and you just say, you know, I blame the political correct mindset of America for sending this girl into harm's way, and I blame her for not being rational.
Absolutely.
You know, if you don't want to be eaten by a shark, you know, don't jump into shark-infested waters.
Correct. I agree with you. I have no sympathy. No, honestly, I'm not being...
Yeah, I have none either.
Because I have no feelings.
Yeah.
But you, if somebody is going drinking poisonous drink...
Right.
Why could he expect not to be killed? I don't know.
Right.
It's a poison.
Right.
They go there to help people. Those people don't want your help. By the way, right. The Taliban... They've been killing doctors who were trying to take care of them.
Of course. Okay, it's been particularly pervasive in Pakistan. In Pakistan, the murder of healthcare workers is pervasive. It was pervasive in Somalia. It was pervasive in Sudan.
It doesn't make sense to go there to try to help people who will kill you. It makes absolutely no sense.
Right. And the fact is that in Syria, they're in the midst of a civil war. And this is not a civil war over government. This is a civil war between Sunni and Shia Islam, and there is nothing you can do to affect that war.
And it's the deadliest form of civil war.
Yes.
Because it's on belief system,
right.
Not politics.
Right.
Deadly. Father against brother, cousin against another cousin. Deadly.
I've had so many thousand death threats, IQ, that I've lost track of them. I don't even pay attention to them anymore.
Join the club.
Yes, so you and I are in the same boat. We do what we do because it must be done. But we do it at great risk. So sometimes when we seem unsympathetic to the curse that is Islam, we've earned that right. We'll be back with IQ Al-Rasuli. IQ, you were the first that I have heard to label Islam a criminal enterprise, a criminal syndicate. And when you contemplate Islam's declarative act, its foundational move, which was the raid of the Badr caravan and the purpose of that raid, and then the 74 terrorist raids that followed and their purpose, which was to steal, it's obvious that you're right. And there really isn't anything more to Islam than understanding that it's a criminal enterprise. But you were also the first to label Muhammad a narcissist. I want you to tell me why you did that, and let's talk a little bit about narcissism and what we can learn about narcissism. And you also apply that to an individual, and that's the reason I looked it up today, because Obama made some announcements on ammunition today and the FCC, net neutrality, and the Keystone Pipeline that all screamed narcissistic behavior to me, as well as his unilateral move on amnesty. They're narcissistic behaviors. So why did you think that Muhammad was a narcissist?
Because when I studied the background, I came out with a very simple conclusion. This is a creature who was born unloved, completely unloved.
Correct.
His father died before or just after he was born. His mother never suckled him.
No, gave him up to a Bedouin to raise him, and she obviously abused him.
Okay. So he never ever had love from anybody.
No, particularly from women. He felt abandoned by women. He hated women.
Definitely, because he was abandoned by his wife, by his mother.
Right. That's why he became a rapist. That's why he became a pedophile, is to lash back out at the women that he came to hate.
Absolutely. Especially after he married Khadija. Khadija was a very powerful woman. According to the traditions of the Muslims, she was 15 years older than him, but she was rich. She was powerful, and she dominated him. There's no question that she dominated him.
Right. But she's the actual impetus for Islam, because Muhammad, after his first encounter with the demonic spirit in the cave, where the spirit almost killed him, very similar experience that Paul had in terms of his demonic experience on the road to Damascus, where the spirit almost killed him, Muhammad tried to commit suicide and said, "I have been demon-possessed." And it was his wife, Khadija, that said, no, that's not going to be. I'm not going to allow you to make a fool of me by making such claims that you were committing suicide and that you were demon-possessed. No, we're going to say that Allah, the rock, the biggest rock here in the rock pile known as the Kaaba, has chosen you to be his messenger. And that's the story you're going with.
Without Khadija, there's absolutely no choice to say that. Yeah. Without Khadija, there would have been no Islam,
right. And
nobody would have heard of Muhammad ever.
That's correct.
Khadija was the master of Islam.
Correct.
Without her, nothing would have come.
Correct. And that's, by the way, that's not our opinion.
No.
That is exactly what the Islamic source materials reveal.
Yes, but this is a type of comment no Muslim cleric will ever mention.
Of course.
Never. I have never ever read anyone who wrote any books about Muhammad by Muslims or by their apologists who put forth the item that I was talking about. That without Khadija, there would have been no Islam. And without Khadija, Muhammad would have been nothing.
Right. Yes, matter of fact, all Allah was at the time was the biggest and oldest rock in the rock pile known as the Kaaba, which helps explain, by the way, what Allahu Akbar actually means.
Exactly.
Yes.
Akbar doesn't mean great. Akbar means either older or bigger.
Right. And the biggest rock and the oldest rock and the rock pile known as the Kaaba.
Absolutely.
Was the rock that was
so
Allah.
They translated or misrepresent Akbar as great. By the way, great in Arabic is Ahdam. Greater is Ahdam. That's why when they speak about Great Britain, they don't say Britain al Kubra. No. Britain al Uzma. So they literally misrepresent even the Arabic language to suit themselves.
Right. Now, as it relates to narcissism, so narcissism is typically born out of a childhood of abuse. And then the person is trying to reestablish some sense of esteem by overemphasizing themselves, by associating themselves with others, typically with mythological representations of others, to elevate their own status because that status was taken from them during childbirth, during their youth, correct?
If you give me a few seconds, I would like to explain to our listeners what are the characteristics of a person who is pathological narcissist. There are 9 characteristics.
Okay. And by the way, when you're telling this list, Christians should think about Paul, the founder of their religion, and Americans should think of Obama, the president of the United States.
Exactly. For you start with, the person who is a narcissist has a grandiose sense of self-importance. He exaggerates his achievements and talents. He expects to be recognized superior without commensurate achievements. That was Muhammad. And this is exactly the same thing as Obama. He's also preoccupied with fantasies of unlimited success, power, brilliance, beauty, or ideal love. Exactly the same thing when somebody studies the history of Muhammad. And when you watch Obama Obama, or you listen to his talks, exactly the same.
Yes.
They believe that he or she is special and unique. If you look at Obama, the way he talks and the way he holds his head, he thinks he is unique.
Yes, as a matter of fact, you know, Time magazine, when he was first elected president, before he actually became president, Time magazine, in their back of the front cover editorial said, it's as if he were God.
Correct. Absolutely. Now, he requires excessive admiration. Muhammad loved admiration. He had to have admiration. He could not countenance anybody who goes against him.
In fact, the name that he chose, Muhammad, actually conveys that, though, you know, one to be admired.
Yes. He does that in the Quran.
Right.
Word for word in the Quran, he demands it.
Right.
He says Allah requires other people to have him, and he is the first perfect and the most perfect human being.
Right. The Quran actually says that Muslims must follow his example. They must be like
exactly.
him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another item, which is item number 5 to be exact, the narcissist has a very strong sense of entitlement.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Muhammad was entitled to 20% of all the plunder.
Yeah.
20%.
Yeah, that's why the Abominator is entitled. Yeah, that's why the Abominator is entitled to bypass the American Constitution and impose his will. And so the FCC net neutrality story, the eliminating AR-15 ammunition, the veto of the Keystone Pipeline, all of those things, amnesty, unilateral, are he's entitled to impose his will.
Yes, but what the irony is this.
Mm-hmm.
Muhammad, it wasn't a republic or a democracy.
Right.
But that's if America has a government.
Right.
It's supposed to be a republic.
Right.
And
supposed
yet
to
Congress
be.
Doesn't do squat anything.
Yes. Right.
Against the usurper in the White House. This is, to be fair, Obama or Hitler or Stalin couldn't do what they did.
Right.
They had to have people who completely believed in them and who supported them.
Yeah.
Same thing here.
Yeah, people are, by the way, people are attracted.
Obama.
Yeah, people are attracted to narcissism. You know, the narcissists pull a group of people who become believers. I mean, we talked in the first hour, a gentleman from Florida called in, Frank, and his daughter is obsessed with a charismatic religious leader. Narcissism is very influential and particularly with the weak. Yes.
Yeah. Well, another item, the narcissist exploit other people. Muhammad did that a billion times. He exploited every single human being who came against him or for him or with him.
He actually exploited half the population. You know, half the population. He turned women into sex objects for men and told women that their entire existence was to please men sexually and that they had absolutely no rights. So he... You could not have a more textbook case of this than Muhammad.
No. Now, another characteristic... Which
by the way, Paul said that men can lord over their wives. Exactly the same thing.
Yes, in the same mentality.
Same mentality.
Item number 7. People who are narcissists have no empathy.
Yeah.
Muhammad never had any compassion or mercy towards anybody. He never loved anybody, by the way.
Oh.
Never.
That's why he was so often in rape and pedophilia.
He never loved anybody.
Right. Rape and pedophilia.
Look at Obama.
You know, can you imagine a person
who could destroy America and support Islam?
Well, look at both cases. Muhammad on one day decapitated between 600 and 900 men and boys while he forced their wives and children to watch. And then he played a game of lots to determine which of his jihadists got to rape which of the female victims. And you can't do that if you have any sense of empathy or morality.
Well,
and what does Obama do? He picked 4,000 people to kill without any due process.
Correct.
There was drones.
Same thing with Obama, by the way. No empathy.
Yeah, no empathy.
And item number 8, they are very envious of other people. Of course he's envious. Muhammad never produced anything in his life. He was always envious of the people who were productive. And who were the productive people in Arabia? Many of the people who were trade workers trading, like in the Quraysh family, the Judaized Arabs and the Christian Arabs.
Yeah.
That's exactly what he was aiming for.
In Obama's case, it's that productive Americans, those that actually work and produce things, he wants to control so that he can impose his socialist, communist will on people. And so he is jealous of those who are productive. And so he demeans them. He seeks to control them. He seeks to rob them. Also that he can control them. That's the nature of it.
And by the way, what we have here is like the Stockholm Syndrome.
Yes.
The very people who paid to put him in the presidency are the ones he is insulting, the ones he is denigrating, and they continue to support him.
Yes.
This is exactly what happens in the Stockholm Syndrome. The victim empathizes with the victimizer.
Yes, fact, if it wasn't for the Stockholm Syndrome, Islam would not exist, because women were abused to get men to follow Muhammad's religion. They were made sex toys for Muhammad's jihadists, and the women ultimately capitulated because for a moment in time, when they weren't abused, they began to respect their abuser. IQ, when you boil it all down, Muhammad was a narcissist, and all of Islam flows out of his own personal battles, this terrible personality disorder that drove everything he said. As a matter of fact, it is narcissism that caused Muhammad to claim that he was receiving messages from Allah, when in fact he made them all up to satiate his own personal lust for sex, power, and money.
In every verse in the Quran, it is always towards Muhammad that they point. Allah is only used as the divine threatening whip to put his followers in line. The version of the Quran instructs Muhammad's followers that they should obey him blindly and unquestioningly.
Otherwise, his God is going to torture them.
Sorry?
Otherwise, his God is going to torture them in hell.
Of course. That they should follow whatever example he may set, which is his sunnah. That they should believe that he is the messenger of Allah. That they should know that Muhammad is superior to any and all other Arabs, if not humanity. That he, Muhammad, has intercessory powers with Allah. That revelations come to him whenever and wherever he needs them. That Allah hates the enemies of Muhammad in even greater measure than Muhammad. That everything Muhammad covets, wants, needs, or lusts for is made halal to him by the will of Allah, through the usual convenient made-to-order revelations, that all those who do not believe in Muhammad or insult Muhammad will end up dead, usually murdered.
In other words, Allah and Muhammad are one and the same.
Are the same. Yes, yes.
And it's the only informed and rational conclusion you can draw from the evidence. And that the reason the Quran is so immoral, so violent, so repulsive, so errant, so contradictory, is because Allah and Muhammad are one and the same. The Quran reflects everything that was wrong with Muhammad. It's nothing more than that.
The Quran is Muhammad's autobiography or alter ego. There is absolutely no doubt about it for anybody who is fair-minded and has two brain cells of logic. You cannot come to any other conclusion. To even think that any kind of God could have put down these abysmal sentences, these hate-mongering sentences, these stupid verses, one has got to be really...
The only difference really in Islam and the mafia is that the mafia says, you know, if you try to leave us, you know, we'll kill you. And, of course, that's what the Quran says in the fourth surah. If you try to leave us, we'll kill you. And, you know, and if you are with us, you're going to be like us, which means you're going to be engaged in criminal enterprise. That's what the eighth surah of the Quran says. So, and our primary tactic is going to be terrorism, which is what the first nine surahs of the Quran says. So, in that regard, the mafia and Islam are identical. The only difference between the two is that In Islam, women are degraded to sex objects, and that's not true in the mafia. They respect women. And number two, in the mafia, they do not claim eternal damnation and eternal torture for those who oppose them. And Muhammad had his alter ego declare that and actually specify how he was going to torture disembodied souls forever in hell.
While he's watching them in hell.
Right. Exactly. So that's really the only difference between Islam and the mafia, is that Islam is worse than the mafia in those two regards. And, you know, the mafia is a bit more discriminating. Islam is a declaration of war against all humankind. It will not stop infecting people until there's no one left to infect.
Absolutely.
I see we have a Frank. Well, no, I'm sorry. You know, we had a caller that I forgot to get to in a timely fashion, but that Jim from Pennsylvania that was watching a CNN news program today where they said that the Islamic State is in position to usher in the second coming, where the Islamic Esau, which has been misassociated with Jesus, which is a misnomer by itself, is going to come and convert the entire world to Islam. Any truth to that?
Of course not.
Yes.
Bullcrap brings more bullcrap.
Right. Liars lie.
You in 2 weeks,
liar too. I look forward to it, IQ. Be safe between now and then. I appreciate what you do. You're the most courageous and the wisest man that I have the opportunity of speaking with you. May God bless you.